Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome. This is Great Inferno again. Well, it's been a while. I would like to welcome you to my show. It is 9 o'clock here at my house, actually. It's my studio. That's right. Right next to the Disney studio. You're probably going to hear a lot of kids in the background, but that is the other studio. And I told them to, they've been told to be quiet, but you know how those Disney kids. Okay, what are we going to talk about today? Today is going to be the 9 at 9. That is right, 9 different topics. This is going to be regarding the health and wellness, and today's health and wellness, that's not 20 years ago health and wellness. We're going to be talking about what's out of the market, what's in the buzz. Just join me here to my show, 347-884-8125. Give me a call there. Give me a buzz. We'll talk about it. Okay? Okie dokie. Let's start. Well, I've always wanted to do that. It's one of those things. I gotta do this. I gotta, whoever's having a birthday tomorrow, send a shout out. Okay? I didn't do that in my last radio show, but I do apologize. That's what I'm apologize to those who had a birthday about a week ago. People that on my friends list and MySpace and Facebook friends. If you're not my Facebook or MySpace friends, and then you are not my friend. No, just kidding. Friends, actually, it's just I call them acquaintances. And if you're my friend, that's good. There's a lot of people out there that call people other people's friends, but they're not really They don't really know each other. They just call them friends. And I'm like, they're not your friend. You know the guy. But anyway, getting sidetracked here. But today we're going to be talking about the health and wellness. And today's health and wellness, keeping me assured that none of these things that we discuss here will be, this is all current. And it's not something that I... made up. Okay. So let's get my co-hosts and we'll get going, shall we? Once again, 347-884-8125. I haven't even opened the chart room yet. Let's open that, shall we? Okay. It says connecting. See, what do you know? I don't have anyone there. Odd. All right. Now, Miss Dawn, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You are. Okay. All right. We're going to be talking about 9 different topics regarding health and nutrition, today. So hopefully some listeners out there can relate to these topics for this segment. If you don't have time to listen to this today, don't worry not. You can podcast it. You can come back here to blogtalkradio.com/greatinferno. And you can actually download it to your podcast or iPod or iTunes, for that matter. Okay, let's... what have you been doing, co-host?
Well, I've been trying to exercise and, with Lord Jesus Christ's help, trying to... not let things come up, like when challenges arise that I try to persevere. I noticed that on your website sometimes you advertise books. Do you think you can ever advertise a book called Resilience? I think it's Faith, Triumph, Hope. It's written by Alonzo Mourning.
Are you referring to my Blog Talk Radio page?
Yeah.
Yes, I have actually.
You have. Okay, good. That's like really inspired me because Alonzo Mourning, you know, he said that whenever, like, if he lost the game, he wouldn't go home or go to a party after. He would work out for like an hour after he lost the game, you know. And so it's like we shouldn't let things like challenges stop us from exercising, you know. We should try to find a way to push through it, you know, if possible, you know. As, for instance, you know, you have a baby
right.
wakes up, you were going to work right. on the treadmill. Well, carry the baby while you walk on the treadmill, you know. Just don't go too fast, depending on how big the baby is. So if it's a little baby, put it in one of those carry-on things, you know, attached, you know, like a backpack
yeah.
on the front or something. But, yeah, so that's what I've been doing lately, trying to exercise, getting fit and stuff, because my husband and I, we have a product brokerage business, but one of the things we personally specialize in is health and wellness. So, yeah, it's
okay.
been a, like a growing experience spiritually. And
well, I want to start talking about the articles I read online, and they're saying that, you know, we all know that over the past few decades, that excess sugar has been categorized as a bad, you know, the bad stuff. It's been categorized as tempting, but hazardous ingredient into our system. You know, sugar is actually, it's bad. If you have too much of those, well, boy, you know, kids nowadays, they can't get enough sugar. I mean, they get sugar from candies, they get sugar from soda, they get sugar from, you know, a lot of things. And that can actually, you know, if you indulge in that, what they call undisciplined, and it causes the you know, your waistline to expand as you grow old. It actually increased your health problems, and hyperactivity in children is actually, you know, it has something to do with the consumption of sugar in the United States here in America. So recently, the New York Times featured an article detailing the ways in which this indulgence is being recast as a healthy alternative to synthetic and corn-based sweeteners. So there's a difference they're trying to say. They said the sugar's days of the bad guys may be coming to an end, and well, at least for now. The fructose, otherwise known as a high fructose corn syrup, has replaced sugar as a sweetener that consumers are shunning. It's, you know, things in the sugar, coffee mates, and stuff like that, and all like high, you know, high fructose corn syrup. I mean, if you're asking, is this the right way to go? Is sugar really the healthier alternative besides, you know, corn base? What are the health benefits of sugar? They're trying to say there's a, you know, there's a health benefit on just using plain sugar compared to the corn base, you know. They say it seems total calorie intake is what impact the body fat levels and weight gain. So it's the first factor assessed when comparing two foods. Both fructose and sugar are forms of carbohydrate. We can't, you know, argue on that. They're both carbohydrates, and when your body's done with them, it's all the same thing, burned as a, you know, as an energy, and contains 4 calories per gram. And both also lack dietary fiber, which goes partially undigested through the body. That's generally lacking nutritious value, and has an impact on insulin and blood glucose levels. While total calorie content is important, it's not the entire story. Different nutrients have also varying impacts on how we feel after we consume them. So, you know, you get sugar rush, you crash later. That's what it is. Okay, and they're trying to say that, you know, adding regular, you know, the natural sugar, not a high fructose, into your coffee would leave you actually a different experience compared to the high fructose. So, that says, you know, that minimizing the damage consumption of both, actually, you know, it lower your health risk significantly. Now, I mean, you know, you're always going to try to be off, and remove both sweeteners from the diet, and instead focus on a complex source of carbohydrates, such as vegetables, potatoes, whole grains, and brown rice, along with the natural sugars found in fruit. So these will give you a well-rounded nutrition without all the excess calories, if you must have sweeteners and diet. So the article is saying that effectively it's, you know, that's sugar, not the high fructose syrup, it's not really that bad. I mean, they're not trying to tell you that, you know, go out there and indulge in every sugar you can get. But the question is the, what is the health more, you know, let's say you're not healthy, you're 50 years old and you're type 1, type 2 diabetes. I mean, should you be listening to this or should you be paying attention to this article?
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
I think that you should find the alternative, which would be honey. Honey is healthier, and I would stay away from Splenda because that's, like, not a good, even though I know a lot of diabetics tend to go towards Splenda.
Splenda is actually an alternative, yeah.
You know, but I think that that has, like, a health risk with Splenda. Like, I don't know for sure about Splenda, but I do know about, like, Sweden Low has been, you know, linked to causing cancer in rats, you know, and
mm-hmm.
and so it has been linked to causing cancer. So I think that you should definitely look into an alternative. Try to even do without, you know, sugar as much
right.
as possible.
Well, yeah, let's say you don't have any knowledge or ideas on what's the difference between high fructose syrup and the regular sugar. I mean, should you be really considering, like, looking into that and trying to get more information and what sugar can do to you?
Yeah, I think
right?
so.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because, like, you know, I mean, even if you have cancer,
right.
you know, some sugars, not all sugars, but some sugars will actually go and start to, like, do damage to your body more, you know, because they will go
right,
because
it's a high intake, high intake of either sugar, whether it be a fructose or, you know, sugar, can potentially lead to issues such as, you know, anemia, diabetes, high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, and Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
really?
I mean, it's a high intake of that. So that's, no, it falls into the moderation is the key.
Right.
Dun, 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 dun.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so as long as you, I mean, either or, I mean, you have to, those are all work, you know, when your body's done with it, they will turn into carbohydrates. You know, so it's, you know, you might want to focus on sources and carbohydrates, like vegetables, potatoes,
mm-hmm.
you know, not the white potatoes, whole grains, and brown rice. Those are what they're trying to say. So those are, no, if you don't know that, now you know. Now you are well informed.
Yep.
I don't think so. I think you are just, try to Google like high fructose syrup and what it can do to you, and also try to Google low glycemic index. Try to do that and go to lifetransitionlifestyle.com, I believe. That's one of the websites that you can go and find out about the low glycemic index.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yep, that's right. You can even go to shoppingsuperhighway.com.
There we go.
You know, we got that on our website. We even have a journal on our website. So if you're like, I don't know how to exercise, what exercise is good? You know, you can, like, get a journal. Tells you, like, what's good to eat, what kind of exercise is good, you know, and things like that. And
also,
I just wanted to say about high fructose corn syrup that if you find that within the first 5 ingredients, usually what that means is that you're going to eat a food and you're going to feel full. But, like, within an hour or two later, you're going to feel hungry again. Because
just like eating
fat.
Chinese food.
Well, I guess so, because, like, you know, actually, it depends on how things are cooked, how it processes through your body, you know, like, like a high fructose corn syrup, it processes really fast, that's why it's high glycemic usually, whereas if you want something that keeps you feeling fuller longer, you need something that's low glycemic. And also, like, I mean, different rices are different, like jasmine rice can be medium to high glycemic if you cook it on the stove. But if you have a rice steamer and you cook it in, like, a rice cooker, then it will be, like, it will be low glycemic.
Interesting.
And that's the same kind of rice, but different way you cook it is you get different results. So definitely do some research on that about how to do that. So,
interesting.
Very interesting.
Next subject here, let's go to the for those migrant sufferers out there. for the nearly 30 million Americans who suffer. 30 million Americans suffers from migraines. There's actually a new hope, they're trying to say, and a hope that eliminates, alleviates some of those pain from your head. Well, actually, the scientists, a clinical trial studying the safety effectiveness of it, is a therapy called a peripheral nerve stimulation is now being conducted in 15 hospitals nationwide. Get this, nationwide. So it's a little machine that can do that. It can do that to you, to hook you up with that. And it's supposed to alleviate some of the migraine headaches. They call this a health system, and explain that this little device can do to ease and to can do that and ease the pain. It includes one or more thin wires that are placed on the back of your scalp. It's right on your nuggets, right in there. And so every time, what you want to do is every time you get a migraine headache, they want you to go into the clinic, and they hook you up in this little machine. And they said, the wires are connected under the skin to the device that is like a cardiac pacemaker. So it's like, you know, you've seen those. So you've been in a hospital, a heart pacemaker. Once implanted, turn in mild electrical pulses and are emitted to stimulate the peripheral nervous system. And this is to, the pain pathways, like your back of your neck, thus reducing the brain, the pain, and brain reducing symptoms and ultimately increasing the patient quality of life. So it's a therapy that, they want to implement. And there's a lady named Catherine, actually, she went through that, and she had a good result. And now they said Catherine's migraine have gotten so bad before that she has to stop working and or participating in the family activities. Now she's somewhat, not all the way, not 100% healed or better, but, it helps her. But I don't know how much it costs, though. The doctors is hopeful to get more trials when it comes to this machine and to control people's or consumers' migraine. And the goal is to get them back into the mode where they can live again. So the trial is still ongoing, but doctors believe this technology will be beneficial, and this technology is here to stay, they said. And they think that they're going to find more indications for it, and if the study does bear out, it is successful, and they think they will, it will open up the door for many patients who took this state really has not been helping them and remain debilitated by the migraines and symptoms of it. I mean, if you have a migraine, would you go to this? Really? Would you like be hooked up with this machine and get you, I don't know. I don't know what you call that. Jump by the jumping cable?
I have several. I have several comments on that. Actually, one would be, I think that if I'm having migraines, I would try the first step of magnesium therapy, and I would try this product called Headrest. And I don't get, like, really bad migraines, but at certain points, times in a month, I do get, like, one of those gnawing headaches where it's kind of like the bright light gets to me. But sometimes I get migraines that's caused by, like, anxiousness, and I'm just like, so I just pray about those ones and they go away. But the ones when certain times in my month when my hormones fluctuating, I take this thing called Headrest. It has, like, different ingredients from all over the world. You can find that at shoppingsuperhighway.com, and it has a lot of magnesium in there for magnesium therapy. My other comment is, it sounds like that the doctors are just redefining acupuncture because, acupuncture, they put things in your face, in your head to get rid of different ailments, or try to, at least ease them. And so I think that you mentioned something about the state. So, yeah, if the state is paying for the insurance and you, instead of saying, oh, this is acupuncture, which usually the state won't pay for, and then you call it, like, this is medical stuff, they'll pay for it probably, So, like,
it's
good that they're
trying
to get people healthy again in America. That's real. It's really going to be getting people out there to work again,
Right, and this is like – implement it has electrical pulses to stimulate the peripheral nervous system is the back of your neck. And that's what, because it's causing the migraines, it's blockage of the blood flow into your brain. Because it has a cognitive tissue or veins under your back and back of your neck, and once it's clogged, when it's disrupted, that would actually cause pain. Yeah, that's simple.
Yep.
I mean, so you take it like magnesium. I mean, it's just like you saying, a lot of doctors in alternative medicine or integrative medicine that would put their patient into the like magnesium therapy, and that's true. So, it's just to think of, you're going to go to the doctor and they hook you up with this thing, they're going to put it under your skin, find a vein, and send you that electrical pulses, and,
It would depend, I guess, on if people have tried magnesium therapy and people have tried everything and nothing's worked. And you definitely need, if you're going to do magnesium therapy, check out your source, because, well, I know personally the product on our website, it's like a lot of, our products are usually heavily regulated, have a lot of scientific studies, but there's other stuff out there that may look like it's cheaper, but it's cheaper quality. It's not going to work. So people really need to try stuff that has a lot of clinical studies done on it.
Right.
That's what I would say, because
scientific studies and a lot of reviews of people, and then you make a decision that way. I mean, that seems like that's a fair imbalance. I mean, don't just go up, jump into buying some stuff and without doing research on it. So that's kind of not being a wise consumer. But we'll jump in from that fake acupuncture to a real one. Actually, the Health Day News actually said had an article today about the acupuncture, and they're saying that it appears to be ineffective in treating menopause related hot flashes, that's according to a research. I just lost my note. According to the researchers who reviewed six randomized controlled studies that compared the effect of real acupunctures and sham acupunctures. That's a different one? I don't know. So only one of the studies found that acupunctures helped reduce the frequency or severity of hot flashes at 4 weeks follow-up after treatment. The number of good randomized controlled trials is too small to draw any firm conclusion about whether acupunctures help treat hot flashes. But the evidence from this study suggests the treatment is ineffective. That's what the doctor says. And the review is actually published in the Journal of Climacteric. So the researchers noted that many women seek help to deal with symptoms that can occur during and after menopause. Because of concerns about hormone replacement therapy, many women seek alternative to deal with their symptoms. But many of these alternative treatments are untested. So women seeking relief from menopausal symptoms should consult their doctor before starting a type of treatment. The president of the International Menopause Society agreed. Ooh, they have precedent of a menopausal people. President of International Menopause Society. And quotes, there is no doubt that many women need relief from the symptoms associated with the menopause. They need to make sure that the treatment they choose works and is right for them. I've always recommended that women consult her physicians before starting any treatment. So those people out there that's going into that age about, hot flashes, and actually they said it's between cold and hot, and I don't know. What do you say about that?
Well, I would say that I have heard good things about the soy therapy on that, like doing a soy, like taking a lot of soy. Also, again, at my husband, my website shop is superhighway.com. You will notice that we have some for that. It's called Feminine, FEMINENE. And that's been, helps with the menopausal and the PMS symptoms, too. That's what I've read. and I've heard. And then also, I have a customer that actually has been helped by the OPC3 with her hot flashes. She says she doesn't get them as much now that she's been on it. And for her, it worked right away. Some people might take up to 90 days. But and as far as acupuncture, yeah, six trials is like kind of like too few to have, you know what I mean? Like, you need to have more people. And wouldn't, like, somebody sticking needles in your face make you hot and nervous anyway? You know, especially if that's your first.
If so someone's going to be waving around some syringe around my face, yes, I would be scared.
Yeah, so maybe that's why it didn't work most of the time.
Hot flashes, man. Well, I get hot flashes one time when it's hot.
Yeah.
Is that the same?
Hot?
No? Isn't that the same when you get, like, really hot on a hot day? During, like, the, you know, the summertime?
Well, I think it's a little bit different because it's psychological, because you're like, why is everybody else cold in here? And I'm so hot, I have to take off my... And then it's psychological because people are like, why are you so hot? You know, and so I think it's psychological too. So you need something to stabilize and balance your mind. So I think that's why the woman might have experienced, you know, OPC3 probably helped her balance her mind, and it helped her with her moods too, she said, so, and with her hot flashes. But yeah, definitely that's like psychological, I think, along with the hot flashes.
Okay, that's all good. Now, we are going to talk, this is like, you know, we all know smoking is like really bad for you, and I would say it's 50-50. I like when they produce, or they come up with this new research, and it's like, look, smoking's bad for you. Duh, you know. but I like, you know, when there's a new thing, so that the Health Day News actually came up with the, you know, I read this article about that, saying that the smoking caused a chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD. It also saying it may cripple the body's immune response to bacteria that can worsen the disease. Well, Canadian researchers reported that. So the findings detected in a study involving mice may influence how smokers with COPD are treated, so the expert says. So this is actually, so if you have COPD and you smoke, I mean, it's just like, I don't know, it's like committing a suicide, I guess. The quote is, it's well established that smoking is a main risk factor for COPD, but the research also suggests that cigarette smoking can substantially change the immune response to bacteria. So which means a patient with COPD who smokes are weakening their body's ability to deal effectively with bacterial invaders. This may cause even further progressions of the disease, quote. So that's what the research guy says from McMaster University said. Another thing to put on the list and why the cigarette's bad for you. So what do you say?
Well, yeah, the way the body works is once you light up your cigarette, or once somebody lights up a cigarette, I mean, by the time they're halfway through with the cigarette, 50% of the vitamin C is depleted out of their body usually. By the time they're completely done with their cigarette, they're about 100% deficient of vitamin C. So yeah, it does damage your immune system and your body's ability to fight infection and your body's ability to fight different things that come across you. So I would suggest that, how about instead of saying you don't have money for like health and nutrition products, why don't you try to get healthy? And if you smoke because if you're nervous, why don't you try some stuff called Bliss? That might just help you. It's all found on shoppingsuperhighway.com. It kind of, like, puts you at a mellow, you know, like, steps down. Doesn't, like, give you, like, make you fall asleep, you know. It's not making you sleepy. That's what I would say. You know, cigarettes, like, $5 a pack. So, you know, people really want to get healthy. People are going to do something about it. Because, I mean, like, you, host, and I know, both know that people that, like, that they say they don't have money, but yet they can find money wherever they need to get cigarettes. You know what I'm saying? So why not with health and nutrition? You know, get healthy.
Oh, yeah, but I think it was because they get addicted to nicotine. Yeah, okay. It's an addiction.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
What is that, those letters stand for?
COPD, that's got to be stand for something that's not really good.
Oh, I see.
Pulmonary disease. Some kind of pulmonary disease.
Like heart disease?
Yeah, something like that. You know, it's associated with cardiovascular diseases. I believe.
Definitely should be on some OPC3 also. Yep, the Bliss and OPC3 Front Shop at superhighway.com. Just trying to help people out there, you know. And gotta do something. I mean, if you're not going to quit smoking, you need to take care of your health. Otherwise, you're going to not have fun if you get lung cancer, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's jump into that from that to this.
All right.
I forgot my cue on the background music here. Huh? There he goes. He kicked in. Wow, that takes forever. Now, let's go from there to here. That's all I want to do. Is that purple? Is purple a new black, I might say? Purple is not simply a popular trend in fashion nowadays. The color of royalty, you know, and the new, it's a new black by the fashionistas. It is also new black in food. It produces aisles and produce aisles at farmers market and on restaurant menus. You can now find a growing array of heirloom and specialty vegetables with a distinctive purple color, you know, like potatoes, tomatoes, carrots, beans, corn, asparagus, peppers, baby artichokes, and cauliflower. The guy says, I'm a huge fan of purple. I think he's a fan of Prince, or formerly known artist, formerly known as Prince. He loves purple too. So, he featured purple potatoes, and he features purple cauliflower on the menu of a true restaurant, a TRU restaurant. I love the color of texture, he said. There is more earth to it. Beyond the pleasing appearance of the plate, the purple color is a cue from nutritional power. The dark pigments responsible for the purplish tones are called anthocyanins, a type of phytonutrient or plant compound hailed for its potential disease-fighting benefits. Studies suggest that anthocyanins may help reduce the risk of heart disease, diabetes, and certain types of cancer. Some evidence indicates that purple pigments may protect our brain as we age. Anthocyanins belong to the flavonoids family of plant compounds. They are among the most potent and all phytonutrients and have gained attention of scientists worldwide. That said, the guy from USDA, quote, if I could only eat one color per day, it would be purple. The guy, James Joseph, said. A neuroscientist at the USDA Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging and Tufts University and co-author of The Color Code, the book A Revolutionary Eating Plan for Optimum Health. There is more data on purple than any other color right now on the market. The most concentrated natural sources of anthocyanins are blue and red fruits, including blackberries, blueberries, cranberries, cherries, conkers, grapes, lesser brown known berries such as chokeberries, elderberries, and bilberries. So studies with these deeply hued fruits have shown promising health benefits, but scientists are investigating ways to boost the level of anthocyanins in commonly eaten foods to offer even greater health-promoting potential. So among the findings, researchers in Great Britain used genes from snapdragons to generate higher production of anthocyanins in tomatoes. Anthocyanins from purple corn were most potent in inhibiting the growth of colon cancer cells compared to the other vegetables. Rats who ate black raspberries, which are particularly rich in anthocyanins, were 50% less prone to developing cancerous tumors in the esophagus. So the study also conducted at Ohio State University, despite the hot trend and health-promoting potential of the color purple, an analysis by the Produce for Better Health Foundation found that only 3% of fruits and vegetables consumed in the U.S. are from the purple or blue category. So we need to eat more purple. With the growing interest in anthocyanins, you'll begin to see pills and products fortified with fruit extracts, but Joseph recommends sticking with the real thing. Seriously? See, he said you're better off with the whole fruit or vegetables. No way. So, he said it gets you purple oil. You can get it by sprinkling blueberries and blackberries on your morning cereal or oatmeal. Make coleslaw with shredded purple cabbage. Use purple potatoes. Slice purple grapes. Add purple carrots. Toss plums into your bag, and after a snack, drink a glass of grape juice. Make chunky salsa with purple corn. Add a side of steamed purple asparagus. Eat a bowl of mixed berries and dessert. For dessert. Wow, I get that all in. Now, what I want to do is, let me get a caller here real quick, and we'll talk about that. 9928, go ahead. What do you think about this? Caller 722-9928, are you there? Maybe not listening there. But anyway, co-host, what do you think about this article that we read today?
Actually, I kind of known about that for a while now. My husband and I, we started our business. Four years ago, and one of the products I mentioned earlier is called OPC3, and people used to ask us, what does that stand for? So we had to, like, look at the book of information. Like, we didn't have to read, but we want to be informed to inform our customers. But so we had to practice that word till we got it. It stands for oligomeric proanthocyanidins. And it's the purple stuff, you know. It's purple. It's in a powder form. It's isotonic, so it means it's the same pressure as. So when you drink it within 5 minutes, it's absorbed into your body at least 95%. So, it's made from, like, purple stuff. You know, it's made from grape seeds. Extract, red wine extract,
right.
Not fermented, and so it's a very, very powerful antioxidant. I do disagree with that person. I think you said it was a doctor or FDA or something like that.
Right. No, the doctor. Yeah, the doctor is saying you're better off with the whole fruit or vegetables.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I don't want to say don't eat fruits and vegetables, but nowadays you can't really get the proper nutrition because of pesticides, at least in America. There's a lot of pesticides put on the vegetables and the fruit, so you really don't get the nutrition like you would have 100 years ago. So that's why I think it's best. I mean, why I think you need to definitely supplement. Like in our one cap of the OPC3, the equivalent of 8 to 9 servings of fruits and vegetables. Yeah, you can eat your fruits and vegetables, but don't rely solely on that. I mean, yeah, they're good.
You never know where that, you know, you don't know where that fruit came from. Is it, you know, I mean, when it comes to, you know, like the difference between a fruit in a can and, you know, a fruit from like a produce aisle, like fresh produce aisle. There's a way, there's a difference, you know, when it comes to nutrients and the ability to have those compounds that are the flavonoids on them. Go ahead.
Also, shelf life. You don't know how long it's been sitting there, you know, and also like
pesticides.
It's best, like a supplement. I'll again do a lot of research on what you're getting, like OPC3. That's at shoppingsuperhighway.com. That's a lot of clinical studies done on that. You know, helps with over 60 different things. You know, and also like has a longer shelf life than like if you go to a store and buy some blueberries. Besides, blueberries are expensive. A lot of the fruits and vegetables are expensive nowadays. You know.
Right, exactly. And it's just like blueberries and grapes and all that stuff. And if you got to buy those, I mean, you don't know how long it's going to last in your fridge. You know?
Exactly.
So
I think, like, especially for our family, my husband and I have 5 kids, you know, it's definitely cheaper to supplement and eat fruits and vegetables, but mainly we get it from our supplements.
Right.
You know, it's just
so it's
that way.
Right. So the caller 9928, do you have something to share?
It's Pinto. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Oh, Pinto. Hey, Pinto the Playhouse. What's going on, dude?
What's up, buddy? That was me trying to call him the first time, having a lot of phone difficulty. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I'm like, we got a stranger on the line. 928's not answering.
Breathing heavy.
Yeah. What are you guys talking about purple so much? We're talking about the, I read an article about today about the purple, you know, eat more purple. Purple is a new black, you know, you eat more purple, like purple tomatoes, purple stuff, purple, because study found that there's actually a flavonoids in them that is really good for you. Like, Yeah, that's just new that I read on health and health and wellness on MSN.com. So I mean, is that really? I mean, the guy says, the doctor says, stick with your fruits and vegetables, and you know, don't supplement yourself with other stuff like that. I mean, my co-host was saying that, you know, she disagrees because you don't know where you're getting that, you know, you're getting that produce. Do you agree?
Right. I totally agree. I do.
Right, and also it's like, you know, I mean, if you really want to benefit from produce nowadays, it's, you know, it's better be what do you call that, co-host?
Organic.
Organic. There you go. Organic. Do you eat organic, Pinto? Organic.
You know what? I try to. I'll be quite honest. I don't eat the healthiest at times, but I have mixed in more healthier eating. So I would say yes, but not all the time.
It's a baby steps, Pinto, just like quitting smoking, just like any other things that you want to quit or want to start anything. Baby steps, just like your dreams, man. If you want to reach that dream, take that baby steps. It's not going to happen overnight.
Exactly.
You know, purple.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I'm not saying you go out there and dress up like, you know, like Prince, you know, purple velvet or anything like that. Or
so we're going to do that now.
Yeah, Pinto's going to go out there and buy some purple velvet.
Right.
So, let's leave that topic aside, and we'll go into the what they called a alcopops. Have you heard of this, Pinto? It's a sweet drink made to taste like cola, soda pop, or punch, or lemonade. It actually, and it looks like just a regular pop, like regular soda can, and it has like what is this? 5 to 8% alcohol in it. And actually, the parents are concerned. They're saying this is actually aiming to teens. It's actually, you know, and it looks like just like, you know, not even adult beverage. It just looks like kids beverage, you know. Alcopops. I don't know who. I think the maker. I don't know who's the maker of it, but supposedly has a high alcohol content on it. Remember the Mike's Hard Lemonade? Remember that when he came up with that the first time? I don't know if you remember that. It looks like, you know, just regular lemonade, and then, you know, they change it to like hard alcohol lemonade. So alcopops, it has alcohol level between 5 to 8%, and then the doctor says, which is a little bit more than most beers, and they market it to look like familiar drinks to kids. That's what Dr. Davis says. The survey of 2,100 adults ages 21 and older found that 52% believe alcopops definitely or probably encourage underage drinking, and that 92% strongly support the use of warning labels on alcopops. It contains alcohol. Do not drink it, kids. You know, stuff like that. They also found that in the poll, about 75% of adults in the United States are concerned underage drinking is a problem. Underage drinking in the U.S. is pretty common, he said. About 20% of 8th graders and 40% of 12th graders drink. Well, I started drinking when I was 7. Those numbers are actually lower than in the mid-90s, but they're still high when you consider the problems that can come from underage drinking. Among the surveys, 84% of respondents support banning alcopops ads from youth websites, 8% support banning alcopop ads from youth magazines, 75% support banning alcopop billboards from within 500 feet of the school or park, 59% support banning alcopop ads during primetime television, 58% support prohibiting alcopop in sponsorship in college sporting events, and also 57% supporting limiting alcopop ads during televised sporting events. What do you take in this? We're going to go with you, co-host, real quick. Alcopops, you know, I haven't seen the thing. I haven't seen the bottle yet, but they're saying that it's, you know, it's aiming towards teens and kids. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I agree with all that. Like, it makes sense to not have it within 500 yards of the school. It makes sense to not advertise during primetime TV, and obviously it makes sense to not advertise in teen magazines. You know, I mean, like us teenagers, that doesn't make sense why they would be. Yeah, they could get sued over that. You know, I mean, like, if their prime target is teenagers, why would they even think about, you know, doing that? Yeah, they could say, well, maybe 12% or something, like 21% are over 21, you know. Well, that doesn't matter. It's targeted towards teen, you know.
Right.
So,
So, Pinto, what's the difference between, you know, putting that advertisement or making an advertisement about the alcohol between the commercial and the Disney Channel than, you know, and the teen magazine? What's the difference? There's nothing different there, right?
You know, I don't see a difference really at all.
Yeah, I don't. So why do you want to, you know, like in a Saturday cartoon, Saturday morning cartoon fast, you know, even when I used to watch those, I mean, I didn't see any, you know, alcohol mark, you know, Mike's Lemonade or Alka Pops contain alcohols and stuff like that, you know. It's just, this is just recently. I think they should ban that. Do you agree?
Should they ban it? Well, I don't think they should ban it, but they didn't target it towards teens and, you know, the younger audience, you know, younger teens and kids, you know, mm-hmm. So that age. I think they should market it as another alcoholic drink. They do with drinks like that. That's what they should, that's how they should market it.
Interesting. That's a good call. Yeah. So what do you think Alka Pop should do? Should they just change the bottle? I mean, they're looking like just like regular bill that says contains alcohol, because apparently the doctor says it doesn't have a label pertaining to alcohol content.
You know what? I think keep the product, you know, don't ban it, but yeah, change the bottle, change the label. Might need a little makeover, so to speak, to let people know that there's an inordinate amount of alcohol in it.
You know what? It's just getting me interesting. I think, you know, one of these days I'm going to get a six-pack of them. Just to make... Just kidding.
Yeah.
I don't drink. What about you, co-host? What do you think on this? What do you think they should just ban it? This, like, from Teen Magazine and all the... I mean, that's 500 feet in a school and park. It's kind of ridiculous, though. What do you think?
What? 500 feet? Should it be, like, near 500 feet of a park? And besides, yeah, if it looks...
What about the highway? What about the highway billboard?
Well, a highway would be different, but I think that, like, the labeling, if it looks like pop, I mean, my husband and I have kids, like, five kids, and, like, when she was 3 years old, and now she's 4 years old, I think she knew how to open a bottle. So, I mean, could you imagine, like, 3 or 4 year old opening the bottle, like, oh, I got it for some pop.
Oh man, I'm drinking to start beating up their sisters. They should just ban that from the kids. It's, you know, especially on the magazine and the sporting events actually that associated with kids. You know, a lot of kids watch those, and they should just ban that completely. Change the bottle. I agree that. Ban the advertising, but not ban the bottle, because it's, you know, just promote it to the adults, not to the kids. Again, you know, we don't know who's going to watch, who's going to be watching TV. That's the only thing. I think they all have the rights to do that. But school and Teen Magazine and they should ban that from off kids. I mean, that's simple, you know, no brainer. So let's move from that to the itch. I got an itch right now. I got a scratch. So this thing is scratching. This is what the scientists found, okay? The scientists have watched spinal nerves transmit the relief signals to the brain in monkeys, a possible step forward towards finding new treatments for persistent itching people. I don't really itch that much, but when I itch my leg and it feels good, I just start kicking. You know, more than 50 conditions can cause serious itching, includes AIDS, Hodgkin's disease, and the side effects of chronic pain treatment. That's what they said. So they actually found that scratching can lead to serious skin damage and infection in people with chronic itching. And so scientists want to find ways for such people to relieve their stress without tearing up their skin. So while medication can relieve some kind of itch, other cases resist current treatments. Nobody knows how scratching relieves itch. Scientists found it. They don't know how they release it. The federally funded monkey study. That's reported Monday on a website in the journal Nature Neuroscience. But a bunch of monkeys actually run those places. They take a step in unraveling the mystery of the itch. Why do they itch? So, why do you think skin itch, Dawn or co-host?
Well, from my understanding, itching a lot of times is a inflammation in the immune system. Like, for instance, like you have, if somebody has allergies and they have itchy eyes, you know, it's because of that. Like psoriasis, I think that's like an itchy condition that may be helped by OPC3. I know that dermatitis, my husband and I, our daughter, she had dermatitis, which is very itchy skin, since she was about a year and a half old. And when she was about maybe 4 years old or so, we started this product called OPC3. As long as she's on it, her itching is not there. I mean, she, like, it, because that's caused from an inflammation immune system. So I would definitely say go to the source. Yeah, I don't know why itching, like why scratching an itch relieves it, but I do know that when you're trying to target an itch, you should try to go to the source if possible.
Mm.
So, it's usually your skin or something.
Right. Well, the scientists actually it is saying that there's a kind of spinal nerve that transmits the itch signal to the brain. This nerve reaches into the brain from near the bottom of the ribcage. And the researchers cetated long-tailed experiments and placed recording electrodes on their spinal nerves. They injected a chemical into the skin of the leg to reduce itching. The nerves fired electrical signals in response. Interesting. Then the researchers scratched the leg with a handheld metal device to stimulate 3 monkey fingers. Then the firing rate dropped, the apparent signature of the relief signal. Interesting. In contrast, when researchers scratched the leg without causing an itch first, the firing rates jumped. So the nerves somehow know to react much differently in their, if there's an itch to be relieved and if there isn't, if there's not. So it just confused me. But Pinto, if there's an itch, you scratch it, right? I mean, it's common sense.
Obviously,
what if,
yeah.
Yeah. What are they trying to prove? What is the scientist trying to prove here?
You might obfuscate him?
The monkey can scratch?
Yes, the monkey is able to scratch themselves is what I'm hearing.
monkey's itching. They can scratch like human.
I really don't know why you're spending time on this, to be quite honest.
It's just fascinating.
I really don't.
Yeah, maybe they said that the scientists can identify the signals which nerve can tell or can relieve, and if there's any itch, and they can just relieve it from there without scratching.
I guess it's somewhat interesting to see if you can relieve an itch without scratching it, but most you ask anybody what they do with an itch, they're going to say, well, gee, genius, why don't you scratch it if you have an itch?
Like an eight-year. Okay, and also this is what trying to do is actually create some kind of drugs to mimic the action of scratching to their brain or to your nerve, without scratching. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to put more medication out there, so you have an itching problem, scratch not. They should label that scratch not pill.
Scratch not, nice. I'll look for that in my local pharmacy.
There you go. Look at the Walgreens near you. Scratch
yeah.
not. So what do you think about this, Coles? I mean, another pill for, another pharmaceutical stuff they're coming up with?
I think it's personally, annoying because it's not like we're better than, I'm better than anybody, but I think what that medicine would really be doing, it would not be going to the root of the problem like I was just talking about. It will just be dulling the thing, just with ibuprofen, that doesn't take away the inflammation in your body. It just dulls your brain to say, hey, don't have pain. And I think they're just looking for something that you can take every day that says, hey, don't scratch, don't itch, it's trying to shut down that part of your brain to be thinking about an itch instead of going to the root of the problem. Like I said earlier, the OPC3, personally has had really good experience with that, and we're not the only ones. I mean, if you really know what the cause is from, you can go to the root of the problem, an inflammation in the immune system. Well,
how about mosquito bites? They make you itch. Or poison ivy or something,
Yep, and that's you got to go again to the root of
it. Outside your skin. Yeah, that's good. So you just, so anyway, we'll jump from that. I'm starting to itch here because we're talking about scratching and stuff. Now we're yeah. See, I lost my note here. Okay. From sketching to minority children. Minority children and those in poor neighborhoods, they said, are more likely to die or need, that's kind of alarming. Poor neighborhoods are more likely to die or need a second heart transplant than white children or those in better off neighborhoods, according to the results of a U.S. study. The study included 135 children, median age of 8.4 years, who received their first heart transplant at Children's Hospital Boston between 1991 and 2005. So there was a study done. There were 110 white children, 10 black children, 8 Hispanic children, and 7 children from other racial groups, like Filipinos maybe. Overall, 40 children died and 6 underwent a retransplant during the study period. 9 of the deaths occurred during the initial hospitalization after the first transplant. Among the children who survived the initial post-transplant hospitalization, there were 31 deaths and 6 retransplants over the median of 6 years. So the study found that children from low socioeconomic neighborhood were 2.4 times more likely to require another heart transplant than those from higher socioeconomic neighborhoods. Minority children were 2.7 times more likely to need a second transplant than white children. Among the 9 deaths during initial post-transplant hospitalization, 6 deaths, 13.3%, involved children in a lower socioeconomic group, and 3.3% involved children in a high socioeconomic group. Children in the lower socioeconomic group had much lower rate of transplanted heart survival at 12 months, 3 years, and 5 years after the transplant. So time to death of retransplantation was significantly shorter from children in the lower socioeconomic group. They were, also had a higher risk of rejection after a transplanted heart. So they're trying to say that minorities like in the ghetto, they're more likely to die or need a second heart transplant than white children or those in better off neighborhoods, according to the results of U.S. study. Let me go with you, Pinto, real quick. Is that really the case? I mean, they're playing with the numbers here. Is that the case, really?
No, I don't think so, really. I think there's something going on with those numbers. I don't think that sounds really correct at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, co-host?
Well, I would have several questions. One, when they were going through that clinical study, were all their hospital bills paid for? Did they make sure all their doctors doctors visits? Because that would have any effect.
He doesn't say that. Pinto, you think money has something to do with it?
It could be possible, but I really don't. I think the numbers again are just a little misconstrued.
Right. They're gonna have to do a study again. It's a study between 1991 and 2005. So I'm sorry.
I have another thing to say.
Go ahead.
And also. So what type of heart were they getting also would be another question. Like, a 60-year-old or I don't remember what age they were when you said, but say that same age, they have to usually get a heart of the same age person. Well, for instance, a 10-year-old, they need a heart transplant to get from another 10-year-old. Where did that 10-year-old grow up? Did that 10-year-old grow up in a poor economic state or did they grow up in a well-off neighborhood?
Right.
I mean,
well, again, the numbers actually is not telling us more whether,
exactly.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to cut it off here because that the main thing here is America's health is failing. And despite an unprecedented biomedical achievements, Americans are sicker than they should be and are dying far too young. Shockingly, our children may be the first generation in America to be less healthy and even leave shorter lives than their parents. More than 23 million children, or nearly 1 in 3, are overweight or obese, greatly increasing the odds that they will develop diabetes, heart disease, or other disabilities. So across the nation, preventable disease and their complications are shortening lives and keeping millions from enjoying life and reaching their full potential at work or school. Low-income people are especially prone to chronic disease. For example, life expectancy of the resident in Montgomery County, Maryland, and one of the wealthier Washington suburbs is 9 years longer than those living in urban core. So again, if you want to get healthy, America, you have to take care of yourself. Do some research, Google some stuff that we talked about here. research yourself, and take actions. Okay, from the standpoint of our economy, hey, you know, our future are our families, so we need to improve our health in greater than ever, and the evidence on how to do it is clear. All right? Thanks.
Exactly.
Thanks, Alcohols. See ya.